Okay, folks, we're going to continue on from where we were talking about as we're looking here in Romans 13 in verses 11 through 14. We're just getting kind of ready for it. We're getting a general idea of its overall effectual working. And one of the main issues is that it's designed to come along and have us for the first time engage in some battle. We're going to do some soldiering. We're going to need some armor to put on. We're going to be casting off these works of darkness. And just to whet the appetite and give you, again, kind of a general idea of how affected we've been by some things that have to do with both the evil man, the course of this world, and the strange woman, the policy of evil that runs as a fabric throughout this world, we view things the way we've been affected by that policy of evil and that wisdom, that competing wisdom of our Father's wisdom, when it comes to understanding the earth, the people of the earth, the traditions of the earth, the cultures of the earth, the environment of the earth. These are things that are so deeply ingrained in us that to go counter to them risks friendships with other people. It risks embarrassment. It risks all kinds of things in connection with the way the publicly accepted policy of the way things are is embraced by men and women in this world. And it's amazing what has been, what is still latent in us when it comes to what God did and what Satan did in the book of Genesis. What happened back there is still with us today. This whole Babylonian system is still deeply ingrained within us. And some of you don't even really even know what I mean by that yet, but you will. But that system of creating a city, Nimrod built, you know, a great city, the attempt to try to get the earth and the heavenly places to operate the way that God wants them to operate. God's actually done things in the heavenly realm and even on this earth that makes it so that the what we commonly call outer space, the heavenly realm, is almost like a building that's kind of been halfway tore down. That there's still some structure to it, but a lot of it, there's far more to what Paul says when he says God subjected the creature to vanity, and that it's in a bondage of corruption. If it's in a bondage of corruption, the building structure of the universe, the building structure of the creature is not allowed by some things God set into place, judgment-wise, to affect the earth and the earth to affect the heavenly realm on the level in which it's supposed to. It's kind of like a human body where the central nervous system isn't working right, and you're kind of bedridden, but you're fully conscious. You just can't get out of that state. That's the way this creature is languishing today. That's why it can't wait. Imagine if you were paralyzed in a bed, and yet your mind was fully aware of everything that was going on around you, but you couldn't speak, you couldn't talk, you could not manifest who you were. That's what paralyzation is. It's the inability. I can't manifest myself. I can't move. I can't have my being. I can't manifest what I am. That's the way that whole realm is. Imagine how exasperating that is and how panic-stricken that would make you. And yet to be able to know that God has individuals that He's preparing to relieve that entire situation and remedy it. And that's what you and I are going to be for. We're not going to be for the remedy of this earth. Only in the sense that when He brings heaven and earth to be able to come together as He ever designed, but we're going to be the embodiment of that earth. We're going to be the manifestors of godliness. That's anyway. I'm getting, when I see all the furrowed brows and everything, I think Mark's losing his mind. We need to rein it in. But honestly, that system that came out of Babylon and everything, that's the way God looks at it. Names change, borders and nations change, But God knows exactly where these things are, and He knows exactly what's going on. And there's more and more that we'll talk about in more detail when we go through some of these things and deal with the works of darkness. But we were talking about outer space, or as men call it, the corrupted zodiac system that's out there today. Those things, the sun, the moon, the stars, they all had, by the way, those are all physical things that represent invisible powers. That's what they are. The sun was given to rule the day and the moon to rule the night. That's ruling is a concept of governing power. And those stars and those constellations all had levels of real power behind them that they represented. And that godly zodiac had guess how many zodiacs are there? 12. That's right. That's because those 12 zodiacs and their moving, those 12 zodiacs in the heavenly realm have to do with the 12 tribes of Israel and the way in which God divides the lands and portions of land up on this earth to correspond with the government on earth being as it is in the heavenly realm. That's all that's happening on this earth. The whole bureaucracy of governing and families and tribes and nations and everything that occur on this earth, they also occur in the heavenly realm. That same thing goes on out there. There are actual, I'm going to use the expression to get the point across, nations in the heavens. One of them is called Persia. One of them is called Grecia. Sounds familiar. Yeah, there was a Persia on this earth and a Greece on this earth. And there was an angel that God had sent to this earth by the name of Gabriel. And when Gabriel got to a particular place, and you'll find this in the 10th chapter of Daniel, if you think I'm making this up. Gabriel gets to a particular part of the heavenly realm and gets stuck. It's almost like he's stuck in customs. And he was held by the prince of Persia for 3 weeks, for 21 days. And Michael, the archangel, had to come and get him out of there and get him down to earth with the message that he was supposed to give to Daniel. Now that tells me that that heavenly realm has got passageways to it. It has lands. It has governmental structure to it, and all of these marvelous things that, and by the way, it wasn't designed to be dark. It's designed to be lit up. But it's in darkness now. But one day it won't be. One day you're going to have, our sun is still going to be around, but it isn't going to give the light on the earth. Our sun will still be there because the sun and the moon and the stars are there for some signs and seasons. But the light that's going to be on this earth comes from somewhere else. And that light is going to be of a particular kind and a particular property that's going to intermingle with some things in the eternal city of the heavenly Jerusalem and the foundation of it that is made of all of these gorgeous and brilliant stones. Stones are another big thing that people... Do you realize that we laugh at it and poo-poo at it and all this kind of thing, but people talk about crystals and stones? I'll bet some of you here this morning, we were talking about the zodiac. I'll bet some of you have a brooch or a ring or something that has your birthstone in it. See, it's just like that drug. And by the way, I'm not saying that we're worshiping these things. I'm not saying that go out and throw everything with you. I'm not saying any of that. You make decisions as an adult son on your own. I'm not telling you to do a thing, but I am telling you that even our birthstones are Babylonian ripoffs of the stones that God has in mind for His city and that are in the heavenly realm and that Satan himself even walked in. And Satan was originally called Lucifer. And he was the bearer of light. Guess who gets to be bearers of light instead of him? You. The body of Christ is going to bear the light in that heavenly realm. You think Satan doesn't know what this assembly is getting ready to do? I guarantee you he knows. And I know how he knows and why he knows. And I know what we're going to face. Because we're now easing our way in to his territory and his turf. That whole system out there is today so skewed and tortured by the course of this world. I was talking about the men of this world. You know, there's people today, they look at things like Easter Island, you know, those great big statues on Easter. They look at Stonehenge. How in the world did they move those stones? Giants. I'm serious. There were giants after the flood. The giants helped build the pyramids. There's an answer to all of that. The Bible has an answer to it, but men won't think, oh no, they had to grease skids and they had to do this and do that, and maybe they used mud and maybe they used polar magnetic fields and all this. No, they're just big guys. Remnants of things that took place when the angelic world tried to... By the way, one of the reasons why the angelic world did what they did at the flood of Noah and tried to intermingle with mankind has a lot to do with understanding what God did with Adam and Eve. They didn't... Angels are male. And they didn't have any females. And they saw God gave Adam this female. All of this is a... There's some wild things going on. The greatest stories that you could ever hear don't come from science fiction. They come from the Word of God in reality. People talk about crystals. They got spiritual power. What was it, that movie? Napoleon Dynamite tried to go back in time or something, and he said, oh, I forgot the crystals, and he put these stupid little crystals in it, and then he just shocked himself to death almost. Well, I want to tell you something. There is some real truth that lays behind, maybe not that, but there's some real truth, latent truth. And by the way, what happened at Babel, at the Tower of Babel, and what happened to the Zodiac and all of that that got corrupted, and the thing about stones, why do men dig up pieces of rocks and put them on their bodies? Why do they do that? It's because there's the nations of this world still have latent memories of the Babylonian system. And like I said, we have these stones, you know, our birthstone. I don't even know what my birthstone is. But people have them, they wear them and everything like that. It's one of the signs of the 12 zodiacs. I'm just saying that just like a drug that's still in the system, there's things still in the system. We haven't even begun to wring the system out of us yet. Well, we have begun. That's true. We've begun. But we've just begun, to quote the Carpenters. Well, just to finish off this little bit here, not only the way in which the universe works, the way in which we think about the sun, the moon, the planets, and the stars. You know, the scientists will tell you that we're just an accidental planet that happened to be flung because of the Big Bang into a particular position that just so happened to be able to sustain life on this earth, and we just can't find any other planet that has sustainable life on it. I'm not saying that you couldn't shoot somebody to Mars and put them in some kind of a pressurized building with artificial oxygen and nitrogen and everything that they would need, and they could live on Mars. I suppose you could. I know some people I'd like to see live there. That are in my own family. But what I'm saying is that this isn't the way our Father looks at it. And the way in which we think about the stars as being symbols of magnificent power and real power that stands behind them. And we're taught and told and programmed that we need to invest our time. We need to invest our time and our money in our effort into further space exploration. You'll hear this all the time. That's the final frontier. Isn't that what Captain Kirk said? And the space exploration, that's the big thing. That's where we need to invest time and money in. That's the biggest waste of time and money you could ever be involved in. That thing is like, that creature out there is like a gigantic building that has just, God has just knocked part of it down. It won't work in its present state. And to explore it is to explore death. That's what's out there. But then again, that's not going to stop anybody from doing that. And I'm certainly my little talk today isn't going to shut NASA down. But this is where, this again, our Father doesn't look at things like that. The pressure is always there to inhabit other planets. The idea today is that we're going to go to Mars and try and inhabit it that. Why do you think man is reaching out there? I'm telling you that all goes back to what is latent in his understanding that came right out of Babylon. Now you may think I'm crazy, but if you understood what started back there and the way that deeply affects the fabric of every nation and every people on this earth, then you'd understand and appreciate why man's inclination is to explore outer space and reach out to outer space and try to conquer outer space. The whole idea is to bring a realm of governing and conquering wherever we go. Because wherever we go, that's what we're going to establish. We did it when we thought it was going to the moon or another planet to come from Europe over here to this country. Well, that was like going to the moon for them. And then when they got off the boat, even before they got off the boat, they come up with a piece of paper of how to govern. And if we send people up there, they're going to govern. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to populate and govern the heavenly realm. That's the bottom line. And it's not going to be populated and governed by anything other than the church, the body of Christ. That's our realm. But the pressure is there, and how the men of this world have a plan for utilizing outer space. They've got a plan of utilizing it. Well, just to put it in a way for us Americans, let me get real personal with us. Let's narrow the field to just us as Americans, American citizens, red, white, and blue. And what I'm about to say, and by the way, everything that I have just said, everything in that kind of little scope of the way the earth is viewed, the way the heavenly realm is viewed, that goes for the left. That goes for Democrats. They don't understand the earth, the people of the earth, or the heavenly places, the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, and all that. They don't understand that the way God does. But what I'm saying is, and here's where it might smart a little bit, but that not only goes for, you'd say, well, yeah, sure. There's no Democrat that understands these things. They're crazy. Those left people are loony. They're satanic. There's people who believe that. This is one of the funniest things that I have the biggest time watching now, just over the last 6 months or so. It's become some of the funnest, funny, literally, since I can't find a sitcom that doesn't deal with anything but sex, I flip over the Fox News Network and watch the comedy. And it's hilarious. Because there isn't any Democrats, leftists, who understand this the way God understands it. That goes for them. And you might say, well, sure, it goes, but I'm saying this goes for the right as well, Republicans. This goes for the Tea Party and independents and libertarians. It goes for the unlearned high school dropout as well as the most learned double PhD academician in the country today, and takes in everything in between. It goes for the realm of rich and poor and everything in between. For every so-called race, you see this all the time. Race, you know, everything is a racial issue. You've probably already encountered just this week starting to say something or starting to think something where, oh, I can't say that or think that because somebody's going to think I'm a racist. And you see the right and the left arguing over race, racist, race, not racist, racist, racist. And God sits up there and laughs at them and says, I don't think about race at all. You're both boobs. Well, God wouldn't say that. But he doesn't think that way. We argue and fight over things that God isn't even remotely interested in. And that goes for the left and that goes for the right. And they're just as wrong, dead wrong, as the left. the rich, the poor, the races of this world, if you're white, if you're black, if you're Indian, if you're Asian. It's interesting, I was listening to a comedian the other day. He's as white as you and me, and he's from South Africa. He goes, I'm an African American. What do you do with me? They stole that title, the blacks stole the title of African American to make us think that African American can only refer to a black person. There's millions of white people who live in Africa and who have moved here from Africa and are African Americans. That's the stupidity and the shallowness of the thinking of men. But they control, don't they? Oh, it's a controlling, oh yeah, it's a powerful controller. It may be stupid as all get out, but it's a wonderful controlling mechanism. It's a shaping mechanism of this world. And if we can package it as in the Bible and put some person on TV that wears a collar, oh, well, now we've canonized it. But it goes for all races. I don't care if you're white, black, Indian, Asian, Spanish, Jewish, Arab. I don't care who you are. You're all under that influence of that system to some degree or another. It goes for all religions. It even goes for the atheists. All religions. That's Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism. I know I've heard of people, they claim to be Jews, and you say, well, when is Rosh Hashanah this year? Rosh Hashanah? I've never heard of Rosh Hashanah my whole life. I don't know. All religions are affected by that Babylonian evil man and strange woman. They don't know what's going on here. And it goes even for the majority, and I hate to say this, of Christianity itself. And that is due to failure to rightly divide the word of truth and just plain old sloppy Bible handling. The truth is, because of the success of the wisdom of this world and the satanic policy of evil, very few people right now, this minute, alive on this earth, have a clue as to God's understanding, what His perspective is about either the earth and those who inhabit it, or the heavenly realm, and what and who, if anyone, inhabits it. That's a sad thing to say when they have the Bible right there. And while the people of this world talk a lot about war, oh, I hear it all the time. They talk about battle and war. The war on poverty. The war on women. The war on minorities. The war on our culture. The war on Christmas. There's one I'd like to see won to the other side. The war on freedom. You hear people talk about that. And by the way, when I say the war on freedom, I don't mean what you think. I mean the war on sexual freedom. We want to have sex with anybody we want, anything we want. There's people who have sex with their cars. We want to have sex everywhere we want, anywhere we want, with anyone or anything we want, anytime we want, until we die. And by the way, we're going to try everything we can to stave off death so we can have more sex, because we want to have sex until we die. Now, I just reflected. All I'm doing is reflecting the commercials I see. And for some reason, sex is equated to a man and a woman sitting in two tubs. I guess that's how babies are born. Watch that Cialis commercial. The end of it, you know they're talking about having sex, but there they sit, and the sun's going down, outdoors in two tubs. I don't know, I guess that's the way to kind of, the innuendo is there, and all of this kind of business. Come on, aren't we past innuendos? Look at the arts and sciences, the arts especially, and I'm a musician. It's unbelievable what's going on. Well, I'm not just talking about this as, oh, well, these are terrible. I'm talking about this as the way God perceives it and understanding really what's going on. These aren't, and here's what I'm hoping to get accomplished at the end of this session, that you understand I'm not just going down the road that a thousand other pastors have gone down talking about sin and wrongdoing. We're talking about works of darkness. We're talking about more than just bad things. We're talking about knowing their origins and knowing what power they have to do. There's a power that those things have that are specifically singled out by Satan for reasons. Satan isn't stupid. He's a genius. And he shapes and molds these things for particular purposes. Man just goes along with, yeah, this is really fun. I'll just go do this. And not knowing, he's just a blind, dupe, dumb idiot who has no idea what the policy of evil is doing to him and the harm that it's causing. And most believers and preachers who preach on sin, evil, and wrongdoing, they don't know either because they've got such a shallow understanding of where these things came from and why Paul mentions these, not just that they're six really bad things, but that they are particular things that have ties to what Satan wants to accomplish in his plan and his purpose in his policy of evil as he rules and governs in this earth and in the heavenly realm. And while people of this earth talk a lot about war and battle, war on democracy, the war on drugs, we're really winning there, aren't we? The war on morals, the war on our venerated traditions, oh, the war on whatever, you fill in the blank. They incessantly talk about this. The truth is the people of this world, under the wisdom of this world and the satanic policy of evil, haven't got a clue as to where what the real battle is or where it's being fought, let alone how to fight it and what weapons can be used against it. And that leads me to the next thing. The weapons that are used against this particular battle. War on this, war on that, war on culture, war on our democracy, war on our venerated traditions. And these idiots on the right are just as dumb and just as blind as the blind ones on the left. They don't even know, like I say, they don't have a clue as to what the armor of light is or how it's to be used. And this is clearly demonstrated. If I may use the example without offending anybody too badly today, if I haven't been able to pull that off already, in this current fight, as they call it, for our country. Fight for our country? We go into another election cycle, you're going to have politicians are going to stand up, I'm going to fight for our country. Fight for what? What exactly are you fighting for? How are you going to make the fight, and what weapons are you going to use to fight it? Well, I'm going to use the Constitution. You're wrong. Forget it. That's what I'm so sick of. And what you're going to have to realize is that there's going to have to be a separation take place because you are more and more becoming not an American. You say, oh, you're becoming a son, and sons don't think the way most Americans think. Sons don't think the way most Christians think. I hear this all the time. We're going to fight for our country, fight for our liberty. You have this fight for where you have the right versus the left, the conservatives versus the liberals or the progressives, as they like to call themselves. Well, you often hear the right talk about saving this country. I want to tell you something. From a son's perspective, they are missing the boat. And I'm not saying this. Let me clarify something. I'm not saying that this is how it should be. What I'm angry about, what I'm a little bit excited about, if you might put it that way, I realize I pound the pulpit there. I haven't pounded the pulpit in a while. The thing that what I'm after here is not to try to say that they should be like us. I'm trying to say that we should not be like them. Do you get that? I'm not trying to say that, well, that this is the answer they should use, because this isn't Israel and this isn't a theocracy. So go ahead and do what angers me and what gets me upset is the fact that so many believers come along and equate the right conservatives of this country with something godly. It's not. It's just a better way of governing. It gives more freedom, and that's good, but it's just another country, and it's just another way of governing. The real zeal and the real ambition and the real enthusiasm of my life is my Father's business and governing in His realm, the way He would govern, not the way some conservative talk show host would govern. And that's the discriminating difference I'm making. I'm not trying to say that believers, in fact, that's a waste of time to try to get conservatives to come around to the biblical point of view. Let them alone. What really gets me going is the fact that Christians seem to think that's what God's will is. Because you often hear the right talk about saving the country and fighting for such things as conservative values. All right? You hear that? Oh, we got to fight and save our conservative values. They talk about, well, that's just plain wrong. They put Molly Cyrus up there. Well, that's just plain wrong. Anybody with 2 cents of a brain knows that's wrong. I didn't need you to tell me that's just plain wrong. But that's what they often do. Oh, you know, that's just not right. No kidding. What we ought to do is go back to our founding fathers. Let's go to the founding fathers. Let's get our conservative values back, get what's right back, and go back to our founding fathers, our good old long-standing traditions, and do what's good for our culture. Well, you just used an awful lot of terms there. You used terms like right and wrong and good. And a great deal of time and energy is spent on this fight and this battle. A lot of recruiting goes on in connection with it. And a lot of Christians get recruited to spend their time dealing with these things. And you see, if we had any brains at all, we'd look back over 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, and we see what it's gotten us. Listen, what we have today as a nation isn't a product of the left. It's a product of the whole population of the United States. Left and right. But more importantly, there's a whole bunch of folks out there that think we can just get back. I hear that. Get back to the good old conservative values of our founding fathers. Really, that's where we want to go. And keep the good old venerated traditions and the good old values of what's right and what's wrong and what's good for our culture. Then that will make things right, or better, or good, or even godly. That is malarkey. Getting back to our founding fathers is not going to make anything godly. The truth is, now here's what I'm leading to, and I think I got your attention. The truth is, every one of these talk show hosts on TV and radio, and I mean them all, your favorite one, or two, or three. And I heard it just this week. Every one of these guys, the talk show hosts, the news programs, and the internet blogs, the websites and blogs, they'll start talking about what's right, conservative values, what's wrong, traditions, good for the culture. They'll go down that road, but when it comes to addressing the single issue of what has to be addressed, they go zoop that way. and they'll go zoop that way, and they will just bypass it altogether. And not one of them, I don't care how big and brave and tough and they talk and sound and how much money they make and they got the best, the highest number of people listening to them, all this kind of garbage, they all do it. And I've heard them do it. I'm not saying it secondhand. I've heard them all do it. They'll get it down to a point, but then they'll just go, oh no, we'll go over here. Guess where the point is that they're avoiding? This book. You won't hear one of them come along and say, the Holy Bible says, this says what's right and what's wrong, and make this the issue. They always make the issue. They always run scurrying back to the founding fathers. It's this. It's not the founding fathers. It's this. It's not the Constitution. It's this. It's not the Declaration of Independence. And you listen carefully to them when they start talking about morals and culture and what's good and what's wrong and what's right. They may talk about, they may get real close, but then they'll avoid it altogether. They'll step right over the Bible. They may even say, well, you know, it's really a biblical issue, but then they won't quote anything. They won't deal with it. They try to get away from that as much as possible. You know why? Because they'd lose their audience. Let me give you an example. These radio talk show hosts and everything, they aren't really addressing the major issue. As I say, and they've used such written documents of men. Documents of men, I've heard them say this. This is firsthand. Like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Gettysburg Address, they talk about these things, oh God help me, they talk about these things as sacred and inspired. Can you imagine saying that the Declaration of Independence was inspired by God? That's blasphemy. See, they just sidestepped this. These words are inspired. There's not a word of our Constitution, of the Declaration of Independence, or the Gettysburg Address that was inspired by God. You know how I know that? Can't find the Declaration of Independence in here. That's what I'd like to do to these guys. Well, you know, the Declaration of Independence is inspired. And then I'd say, show me. Turn to the Declaration of Independence in this 66 book Bible. It's not in there. If we can just get back to them, though, everything will be okay. Well, let me tell you something. Have you been to Washington, D.C. lately? Or at all? How many in here has never been to Washington, D.C.? So everybody in here has been to D.C. Good. You don't think that Babylonian system isn't still in us? Have you seen Washington, D.C.? You know what that is? You look at the monuments we've erected. Yeah, everybody knows that. If you go to Washington, that thing is almost everywhere you look. The Washington Monument. And I know it's got some stupid Latin thing up at the top of it that says, "To God be the glory," or some dumb thing like that. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is an Egyptian obelisk. That is a phallic symbol of the old religious phallic cults. If you don't know what a phallus is, then see me after class. But that's what that is. Now, I like George Washington. I don't love the guy, but I like him. I like old Washington. I think he did a lot of good for our country. I don't think half the things that get attached to him are true, but I think he was a really great guy. Couldn't we have done better than a Babylonian? And by the way, even though that goes to Egypt, everything from Egypt comes right out of Babylon. Couldn't we have done better than a phallic symbol for him as a monument? That we announce to the world how we are still in the Babylonian system by erecting a Babylonian symbol to our greatest president, so to speak? Well, what about this guy? You know who this is? Some Greek god? Yeah, or Roman God. You know where that is? That's in front of the Library of Congress. That's Neptune. That's Neptune. And as you go into the front of the Library of Congress, you got Neptune there. He was the brother of Minerva, the goddess of war. Minerva was the Roman goddess of wisdom and war. Minerva is always pictured with an owl on her head. You ever wonder where we get the idea that owls have wisdom? From Babylon. You know that little show that goes, well, did somebody tell you that owls aren't always wise? And then you know that little commercial. Anyway, trying to inject a little humor into this. But we just go, oh, owls are wise. Where did that come from? Owls are wise? My son ran over one the other day. It was not very wise. That comes from Babylon. Old Neptune there, by the way, Minerva, I'm going to talk about her a little bit more, his mother in Roman mythology, and she was the goddess of wisdom, war, and the arts and sciences. It's one of the things that the adversary knows very well how controlling and shaping they are the arts and sciences. Well, I'm sure you're all familiar. I could go through, when I was looking at these, almost everywhere you go in Washington, D.C., you're going to see all kinds of reliefs and statues and images of the gods, of pagan gods. This is a pagan god that's outside our Library of Congress. You all have seen this. Somebody's thing is going off out there. I don't know if it's one of yours. This is the reverse of the Great Seal, right? Now again, I'm not saying that we're worshiping these things. I'm not saying it this way. I'm not saying that God is going to judge us, and God's going to judge the whole world. I'm saying that this is so much a part of the fabric of our thinking and system, we just pass over it as it doesn't mean anything. But it does have something to do with things. This is the reverse of the Great Seal. It's on our dollar bill. And I'm only pointing out, I'm not going to go into all of the spooky things that people think about when they think about it. All I'm saying is there's the Egyptian, a pagan pyramid that's on our that we decided to stick there on our... This is what our founding fathers did, by the way. Our venerated founding fathers. Has it ever occurred to anybody, any of these historians and conservatives, we want to get back to our founding fathers, has it ever occurred to them that many of our founding fathers had the ability to profess what they did not believe? Did that ever occur to them? Have you ever heard the phrase, actions speak louder than words? This is their actions. Their words, you know, I know that some of these guys in these Christian shows, they can get these books and say, well, here's a speech that Thomas Jefferson made, and he mentioned God, and here's a speech George Washington, and here's a speech that Ben Franklin made, and here's a speech this guy made. And does it ever occur to these people that you can profess what you do not believe? Look at what they did. George Washington, he's a really great... And yet, when he laid the foundation stone at the Capitol building, he did it with a purely pagan Masonic rite. That's what he did, regardless of what he professed. And doesn't this kind of dig at you a little bit? I mean, it does me. Like, how dare you say this kind of stuff? Who does he think he... That's what this, the difference between that and this, it shows how deep this gets ingrained. And I'm gonna pick on myself now. And again, I'm not saying that, oh, we need to get a campaign, we need to get the dollar bill changed. I don't. No. We need to tear down the Washington Monument. Let's start. No. I don't see anybody going to the Washington Monument and worshiping it. I'm trying to point out it's still in our system. Every nation, including the United States, has latent memories of Babylon. It's in all the nations. And there are things the adversary has done to see to it that that's been propagated through what he generated, his generations. That's why when you go to the Word of God, you realize God puts a lot of stock into generations and generations and generations. So let me pick on myself, lest you think that I've picked on you today. Poor Lisa, I took away Charles Dickens and the Christmas. Now I'm messing around with this. You know what this is? That is the Congressional Medal of Honor. This right now is the Navy version of the Medal of Honor, but the dies that were originally made for the Medal of Honor, this planchet or the metal part of it was the same whether you got it in the Army or the Navy. This was the same. And I'm told, I don't know that they do this, but I'm told that the original dies, but Rob would appreciate this, the original dies that were made for the Medal of Honor in 1861 and 1862 are still so good and so sharp that they can be used today to strike the Medal of Honor. This was the original design. It has 34 stars around it. Those stars are 34 because that's how many states existed in 1862. But what you see there, and by the way, I'm not even going to mention the fact that you have oak and laurel leaves here. Those go back to pagan religions in Rome and Babylon. But the scene that you have there, this girl, this woman here, is Minerva. Remember her son? That's Minerva. See what she's got on her head? That's not an eagle, that's an owl. Minerva always had the owl on her head because she was the goddess of wisdom. And that shield, well, let me tell you, instead of doing that, this is called Minerva repelling discord. The Roman goddess Minerva wears an owl for wisdom on her helmet. By the way, this information I got word for word off the Medal of Honor site. So I'm not making this up. I knew this, by the way, years ago. She wears an owl for wisdom on her helmet. Her left hand holds rods and an axe for authority. Her right hand, the shield of union. Of course, the union was big in when the Civil War broke out. The man clutching snakes is called Discord, an apt symbol, they say, for the chaos of the Civil War. And this is her repelling discord. All right. So you have Minerva. By the way, I knew of at least one Medal of Honor recipient who would never ever wear his medal because of that. Now, you can say that's great or not. Again, we're not worshiping it. But it's a pagan it's a pagan idol. I won't even go into the pagan system of tattooing and body piercing. But anyway, today that would just be all seagoing military personnel would receive that one. So that goes for the Marines, the Navy, and the Coast Guard. They would receive that. Along about, I think it was after World War I. It was right after World War I. I'm thinking back, I can't remember the dates exactly. I think it was in the 1920s. They changed, the Navy Medal of Honor actually has gotten changed several times. It went to this really ugly looking thing that Tiffany made. And that was given out to the World War I recipients, and it's in a cross. It's called the Tiffany Cross Medal of Honor, and Tiffany made it for a little while. They had a really cool box that it came in too. Tiffany is always great on the boxes they put their stuff in. Then it went back to this. But the Army version of it, there is a fellow by the name of Gillespie, where they believe the Army should have their own rendition of the Medal of Honor, and so the Army came along, and it went through a lot of variations until it came to what is called the Gillespie Medal of Honor, and this is a close-up of the Army version of the Gillespie Medal of Honor, and you'll notice that that is also a woman. It's the same woman that's on the Navy version. That's Minerva. And so it says the scene of Minerva repelling discord is so appropriate during the time of the disunion. It's now a simple profile on the Army version. It's just Minerva's profile of the helmeted goddess of war, still with an owl on her helmet. You see the little owl is right there. Here's the little owl. There he is. Representing wisdom. And by the way, you've got a laurel wreath here that goes right back to Roman paganism as well. So again, it's full of pagan symbols. And lest you think the Air Force was any different, the Air Force came along in 1960, I believe it was, with their version of the Medal of Honor. They have to do everything bigger. And I don't know what it is about the Air Force, but they just like to do everything larger. If you ever see even the Air Force, the Air Force Distinguished Service Medal, it used to be this small little piece of metal, and then they put it, now it's this like huge thing with all these points sticking out, and it's got this kind of blue thing in the middle of it, and it's just gigantic, and it's almost like you'd pin it on, you'd go like this. But they came along with a bigger, their version of the Medal of Honor is physically larger, but what they went with, instead of Minerva, they went with that gal, another woman. You notice the Medal of Honor has no men involved in it, it's all women. And that, of course, is the Statue of Liberty. And the head of the Statue of Liberty has been replaced by Minerva. Lady Liberty's image is based on that of Semiramis, Queen of Babylon. These aren't my words. This is on the Medal of Honor site. Queen of Babylon and wife of Nimrod. Those are my words. I put the parenthesis in there. But the queen, she was the queen of Babylon, the wife of Nimrod. Famed for beauty, strength, and wisdom, she is said to have built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Now, what I'm, again, one of the things I'm after in all this isn't to destroy your fun that you've had in all these things, nor is it to try to get any of these things changed. I'm simply trying to point out how these things are so deeply ingrained and incorporated into the fabric of the way we think that we just pass over it. How appropriate was it that when we finally launched to go to the moon, the program that we called it was Apollo, a pagan god? We do it just without even thinking. It just passes over us like nothing. And what I'm trying to do is to awaken you to that. And that's exactly what this passage of God's Word is going to do. It's going to begin doing some marvelous things in connection with all of these. And let me go back to that before we finish. And we need to finish. What I'm saying again, even when you look at Washington, D.C., and you see the monuments we've erected that depict something from old Babylon. Babylon, what I'm after in all this is the bottom line is part of our culture, right, middle, or left. It's part of us. It's part of me. And I hate that about myself. How I'm so easily acceptable of something that is so ingrained in the satanic policy of evil. Again, I'm not saying that we're going to go out and start campaigning to get all these. That's not it at all. This won't allow us to do that. But what I am after is that you understand and appreciate that all of these pundits and people and all the things I've been, they avoid completely the real and only sacred and inspired text, the Holy Bible, the Holy Bible. Not a Bible, the Holy Bible. I'm talking about this King James Bible. And without addressing that issue, the truth is even among the most devoted conservatives out there, ultimately, when they talk about right and wrong, founding fathers, conservative values, venerated traditions, good for our culture, everything they're saying is basically just their opinion. That's all it is. Even the guys you love on the right, without coming back to this, coming to this, and only this, it's just their opinion. If our founding fathers were so good and they were so brilliant and got things going so well, why did it only last a year or two? I mean, seriously, by the end of George Washington's administration, the wheels were falling off already. Well, I'm trying to show you the difference between the opinions of men and God's perspective. And without God's word, that's all men have, are their opinions. Well, again, we're at a point where we're going to begin dealing with this battle issue. And we're out of time for today, but we're going to touch on some of these things. By the way, I was going to tell you this too. I had this little thing up here. When I was talking about D.C. and the founding fathers, I came across this. On August the 2nd, 1789, the Massachusetts Sentinel, their newspaper, published an article titled "Redundant Saturnina Regina," which basically means the return of the Saturn Age, the return of the Age of Saturn. Do you remember in the 70s when a group came out where the rock opera Hair, and they had this song in it called "The Age of Aquarius"? You know how that song starts out? The moon is in the seventh house. When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter is aligned with Mars, and peace, we almost could break into it. That's based on the corruption of the zodiac and those old traditions. And when this nation started, going back to its founding fathers and going back to its founding, a Massachusetts newspaper, it was so ingrained in the Age of Enlightenment, declared that the Age of Saturn had arrived again. And that was an age, a return to freedom, wisdom, freedom of religion, justice, law, order, peace. All these words that are used outside of how God looks at it in this book, but used how men look at it, because men want to live in peace and prosperity, by and large. And you can be as conservative to the core and be totally biblically off because you haven't addressed where the real answer lies. In 1788, James Trenchard published an engraving in Philadelphia's Columbian Magazine entitled "The Temple of Liberty." And that's an amazing thing to see, because there's a illustration that goes along with this, but you have this whole issue of Columbia with the eagle's head and all of this on, and standing below is this thing called Concordia, the whole Horn of Plenty, our Horn of Plenty, that comes from paganism as well. And you had several in this engraving that they used, where the Constitution is held in the hand of different pagan goddesses, Clio, the muse of history, writing the sacred story of the world, as they call it. And across the front of this piece that was were the words "sacred to liberty, justice, and peace." Again, using all pagan imagery and mingling the Constitution in with it, that was warmly received and embraced by our nation when it was first founded. Now, granted, in their writings it may differ greatly than their actions, but what you're left with is the residue of their actions, not their words. Well, these are some things that you start to get your eyes open to, where this battle is taking us, because it's going to be a battle that concerns light and darkness. And again, we're not going to, there's a lot of things, I'm not going to, there's some of these things preachers have preached on for centuries, but very few of them have been able to understand and appreciate exactly how they're connected and why they are problems for a saint today when it comes to judgment and how they utilize their time in the manner in which God Himself utilizes it. And so we'll start bringing some of this together. I'm just trying to get some things out on the table that maybe you'll give some thought to. Well, we'll stop it right there, and on Wednesday night maybe we can start tidying up the general, because there's still some fascinating things that's going to take place here, but the general overall effectual working of verses 11 through 14. So we'll stop right there, and we'll pick it up then on Wednesday night with our heads bowed.